This is the most comprehensive piece of legislation that addresses multiple needs exhibited in rural areas.
Patterson answered, quote, "I don't know," 113 times to questions about medical explanations other than abuse that could have explained the injuries.
This is a very unique opportunity and a unique precedent.
From the fourth floor of the Capitol Rotunda, you're listening to WFSU Public Media's Capitol Report, the podcast. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report, the podcast. I'm Tom Flanagan. Among today's Capitol action, a bill to help grow rural communities is heading to the Senate floor. The measure, which has been dubbed the Rural Renaissance Bill, cleared its first committee today. But first, it underwent a few changes, mostly to increase funding. Adrian Andrews has that.
Tallahassee Republican Senator Corey Simon is behind the measure. He is asking the legislature for nearly $200 million for rural development and creating grant programs to ensure people from smaller counties have access to health care, education, and housing. The bill, which is a priority of Senate President Ben Albritton, was cleared by one committee earlier this month. A second panel took up the amended version Thursday morning. The changes, Simon says, would increase state funding for critical access hospitals to the tune of $6.5 million.
This bill does the following: diversify our view of what economic development looks like in rural Florida, focus on infrastructure improvements that support homegrown businesses and legacy farms and citrus producers, expands the existing Florida reimbursement assistance for medical education programs.
Simon also amended the bill to grow rural Florida's economy. It now requires Visit Florida to provide marketing assistance to agritourism businesses, while adding a teacher recruitment program that offers different initiatives to recruit educators to rural counties. Simon says this and more will be done primarily through a new state department focused solely on smaller communities. He calls it the Office of Rural Prosperity.
It will be led by our local governments. And that's the way it should be when we start talking about these communities that we're trying to operate in and trying to grow smartly.
A few local officials attended Thursday's bill hearing. Chris Doolin, a lobbyist for the Small County Coalition, praised Simon for his bill and the changes made. He says smaller counties can focus more on building up their schools and more.
This is the most comprehensive piece of legislation that addresses multiple needs exhibited in rural areas. I was listening to the amendments this morning. It was exciting, the small changes, which are not small.
The bill now heads to the Senate floor. I'm Adrian Andrews.
Sometimes a second opinion in abuse cases is needed. A panel of Florida lawmakers agreed today officials should consider whether a child's injuries are really the result of abuse or if they could stem from a rare medical condition. Margie Menzel tells the story behind a bill known as Patterson's Law.
In 2022, Michael Patterson's children were removed from the home he shares with his wife, Tasha.
Too often, rare medical conditions are mistaken for signs of abuse, leading to heartbreak and separation and unrepairable harm to family.
Patterson says that's what happened to his family. When his twin boys were just a matter of weeks old, the Pattersons were accused of child neglect due to injuries the boys had already incurred. But even after the children were removed, Tasha Patterson says, the twins kept getting injured.
Those repeated fractures after they were removed led to doctors placing them on special handling precautions, vitamin D supplementation, formula changes, and 5 months of physical therapy, measures that finally helped them and prevented any further injuries. And for that, I thank God.
It turns out that Tasha has a rare medical disorder, and so do her sons.
Later, we discovered that my twins and I have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome as well as metabolic bone disease. I was placed on medications during pregnancy that contributed to their weakened bones. Despite this exonerating evidence, our parental rights were terminated.
2.5 years later, the twins and their older half-brother are still not allowed to live with their parents. The Pattersons have spent all their savings in efforts to prove their innocence and get their children back. They recently spoke in favor of a bill by Broward County Democratic Senator Barbara Sharif, which would allow a second opinion by an expert in cases like theirs. The Pattersons say that the child protection team at the Florida Department of Children and Families made a tragic misdiagnosis in their son's case.
DCF and the court relied on the CPT provider, who had less experience than the multiple physicians that we had, who concluded that this was not abuse, including our own child abuse pediatrician, the founding father of child abuse pediatrics, Dr. Eli Neuberger, reviewed our case and concluded that this was medical and not abuse.
It has been an uphill battle to undo the damage that was done by the department's child protection team.
That's attorney Valentina Villalobos, who has represented both parents and children in dependency cases. She says child protection teams, while well-intentioned, can't possibly be experts in all the conditions they encounter.
In the Patterson's case, the child protection team doctor, in a later deposition, after presenting damaging testimony against the Pattersons, admitted to having virtually no knowledge about Ehlers-Danlos. In fact, the CPT doctor, the key witness against the Patterson, answered, quote, "I don't know," 113 times to questions about medical explanations other than abuse that could have explained the injuries.
Sharif's bill would allow an accused perpetrator of abuse, abandonment, or neglect of a child to request a medical examination of that child by a licensed physician or advanced practice registered nurse who routinely provides medical care to pediatric patients. The bill also requires the requested examination to be paid for by the alleged perpetrator or as otherwise covered by insurance. It requires a child protective investigator who has begun an investigation into a report of child abuse to tell the parent being investigated that he or she has the right to ask for a medical exam for these purposes. I'm Margie Menzel.
An effort to impose stricter penalties on reckless boaters continues moving forward in the Florida legislature. A House panel today approved the bill known as Lucy's Law after a Senate committee passed similar legislation yesterday. Both proposals are named after Lucy Fernandez, a 17-year-old killed in 2022 when the boat she and 13 others were on hit a channel marker in Miami-Dade County. In backing increased boater education, Lucy's mother, Melissa Fernandez, told the committees that Florida leads the nation in registered vessels along with boating fatalities.
The only real way to prevent these tragedies is to make boater education and safety the priority across all ages and all groups. If you are operating a boat, you should be able to show you know how to do it safely. Anything less is gambling with lives.
Florida requires boat operators born after 1988 to take a boating safety course. Under the legislation, people born before 1988 would have to take the course if they're charged with reckless boating or if they receive two non-criminal boating violations within a 12-month period. The legislation would also increase penalties for boat operators who leave the scene of a crash or make false statements to law enforcement. Finally tonight, Republican Florida lawmakers want to fast-track President Donald Trump's presidential library in the state as soon as he terms out. Tristan Wood reports a proposal would keep local governments from blocking the building in their towns.
Pensacola Republican Senator Alex Andrade's bill would prohibit local governments from adopting or enforcing ordinances, regulations, or policies that limit the creation or running of a presidential library.
For the first time in America's history, we have this amazing opportunity to have a presidential library here in the state of Florida, and I want to make that process as easy as possible.
The measure passed its final committee Thursday along party lines. Orlando Democratic Representative Anna Eskimani expressed concerns it would keep local governments from making sure the potential new building fits into the community's growth plans.
This is a very unique opportunity and unique precedent. If the president, for example, wanted to add a hotel to his library or a casino to his library, does your bill contemplate untraditional libraries and just what would be the local government's enforcement of that?
The bill comes as presidential library sites have become a game of political football. Earlier this month, the Elon Musk-led Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, terminated the lease for the Obama Presidential Library site, speeding up plans to move it to a different location. I'm Tristan Wood.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Adrian Andrews, Gina Jordan, Regan McCarthy, Margie Menzel, and Tristan Wood. Shows are available Monday through Thursday by 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, wherever you get your podcasts. On many of these Florida public radio stations, you can tune in each Friday to catch the latest on all things happening at the Capitol. That show's also available in podcast form. Technical assistance comes from Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report, the podcast from WFSU Public Media.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.